Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Wesley Mission Victoria and broadcast through the Community Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Welcome to the award-winning program of Listen to Older Voices and the third and final part of the amazing story of John Larson and his sea adventures, particularly in the Antarctic. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm glad you've joined me for the climax of what has been a most amazing story, that of the Danish-born Australian citizen John Larson. John's sea experiences in the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans lead him eventually to sailing in the Antarctic. In part three, John shares not just stories, but stories with remarkable detail of adventures, observations, and mishaps involving the Antarctic and Australia's presence there. Yes, this is an educative story, but it's also a story full of imagery and humour. It's not often we get the opportunity to sit and listen to such first-hand stories, so settle back and be prepared to be regaled with some amazing tales. We pick up with John talking about being iced in and unable to get to the Australian base that was the destination of his ship.
But unfortunately, all the ice from Marquette Bay, where Horseshoe Station was pressed up. So we sat there for quite some time, and there was nowhere in the world that the ice was going to give away. So we had to depart and then go up around the island and try to come into Marquette Bay from the outside. And we got down to Marquette Bay, and the old man, he found a lead in to the water, into the ice, and we got in there. And it was almost sort of, there was a great big open lake. There was ice all behind us and on the side, but there was this great big lake. So Fuchs decided that it would be a good idea if we took a trip in the airplane again. So we went up and flew around, and then we had an urgent call from the ship that we had to come back again because the ice was closing off.
Oh.
So we just managed to get back again. Between the ship and the base, there was only ice. There was nowhere in the world we could ever got in there. So we just managed to get back to the ship again and land, and it hadn't been because the ship was parked in such a way that the landing strip stopped us from going anywhere else. So we just drifted up and the pontoon hit the ship and we stopped.
Wow.
Right. If we had waited an hour, half an hour coming back, we would not have come down.
Goodness me.
We would have had to go back up to Deception Island and stay there, and I don't think I would have liked to be there with all the fellas. Anyway, that was the story.
So there are dangers along with the beauty, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. So we sat there for another fortnight, and the ship, or the ice closed in, and the stern got lifted out 10 feet out of the water, and we had a lift to the starboard side.
So that doesn't make living on the boat easy, does it, if you're constantly on a tilt?
That was really, you were talking about loneliness on a ship, and that was really when you put people's mind to the extent.
Sure.
And all these young people, all the young explorers, you know, they went completely berserk. When I say berserk, they had nothing to do. So what they did was, there were 36 of them, of course.
36, gosh.
They divided themselves up in two parties. So they had a day party and a night party. So the one that got up at 8 o'clock, they had their breakfast. And then the drucking on went on all bloody day until the night party started.
Oh, gosh.
So it was a 24 hours. So it got a little bit too much for the old man, so he told them to cut it out. Well, that didn't help. Eventually, it got a little bit too much for Fuchs, too. So he had a word with them. That helped a little bit, but not much. Well, then in the meantime, of course, Fuchs had been in touch with the Yanks, and they have a ship down there, or had in those days, of course, an icebreaker. They took their big ships into in the Ross Sea, and the ship was called the Glacier, and the Glacier was 10,000 ton or something like that. So one day we saw smoke out on the horizon, and Glacier came down and came in, and the admiral, there's always an admiral on the Yankee ship, and then the captain.
Goodness, overkill?
All Navy style, you know. Anyway, the ship was making its way down, but the first one that came, that was the admiral and the captain, and they flew in on a helicopter and landed next to us. And they came aboard, and we had a chat about what was going to happen. I think they want to fly back to the Glacier again, and the helicopter wouldn't start. So a message got sent back to Glacier, you know, sent the other helicopter down. But in the meantime, chief engineer had got hold of electric cable enough, and we produced electricity, so we could get the battery going again. So he got off. So by the time the second helicopter came, this fella, he was ready to fly, so he didn't have to come down. And then we spent the next 3 days in trying to... the next day, Glacier backed up, or we were stopped right in front of us, and put his stern up against our bow, and we were supposed to hook up to their great big towing cable. And the towing cable was 6 inches in diameter. And there was nowhere in the world that I could get that connected to anything in the ship. So we tried.
Oh, that's right. I see. So you've got a big cable, but it's got actually attached to something.
Yeah.
Ah.
Well, the cable is attached to Glacier.
Yes,
and
but
then you're right. They feed it out. And the at the stern end of the Glacier is a sort of, how can I explain that? There's a cut into the stern of Glacier. And the idea is that you put your bow up there and tie up, so you're actually piggybacking.
Okay.
So the two ships become one ship.
Right. That's the theory.
Well, you can do that with other ships that have got the equipment, but we didn't have the equipment. And every wire I put on, they all broke. So the decision was made, we just had to follow him. But the old man, of course, he wasn't too happy about getting too close. So every time Glacier opened up his machinery and started to move forward, well, he just pushed us backwards. And Glacier was that wide, or the width of Glacier was the length of my little ship.
Right.
So when he started his three propellers at the back, well, he just put us four ships.
Yes.
So he then had to go back and go around us.
Gosh.
And chew up all the ice again, and then we had to try to follow again.
Did it work?
Well, it did work, but it was to tease him. Well, it should only have taken I don't know how long time it really would have taken if we had been piggybacking, but it took us 2.5 days to get out of 80 miles of ice.
Wow, that's tedious.
The ice was 10 feet thick, and that was the old ice. See, there's many things you need to know about the ice to really sort of try to understand.
Like, for instance, you say he's breaking it up. How quickly does it reform and go solid again? Is it quick or...?
There's an old secret from us old sailors, you know, that one of the things you must do is that you must get out of the ice before the 1st of March. Because at the 1st of March, the sun is almost gone down. So the ice starts to freeze again.
Right.
And when it starts to show the pancake ice, as we called it, which is one needs to see it before you understand what pancake ice is. But it is actually like a little pancake. And the little pancake gets bigger and bigger and thicker and thicker.
Right.
And then it melts up or glue up with all the other things. They've been sitting there for a couple of years. So you create a frozen sea.
Yes.
That's really what it's all about.
Yes.
And if you have got sea that have been frozen in for 2 years, well, then it's a little bit...
That's solid.
It's yes. a little bit solid.
Yes. Did you visit the bases at all?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was life in the bases like?
Well, 50 years ago, it was the difference of what it is today. It was terrible. How they could live there. See, there's many... It was basically just huts. That's all you can say. 1 year, that was the first year down with Phil Law. We visited the Commonwealth Bay, and I went up and visited the Mawson's hut. There's many different things. 1 year went to the French base, which were an hour. See, these people that go down there, they're going to have to, they've got to do something. So they tried to find out all sorts of strange things. And one of the things one of the fellows found out, we must find out how people live. Do we put them like the English? They all live in a great big quarter.
Right.
They're all in there. The French, they like to put them in small cabins.
Right.
What they do today, I got no idea. But the next thing they got to find out is what colour suits them best. So you get one little room that's painted green, another one blue, and another one red, and another one just white, to find out how people react to this sort
right,
of thing.
Right.
All in science.
Right.
You've got to have to understand that half the people that go down there have to be mad in the first place. We had a Frenchman that was standing on the last little bit of ice when we pulled out from Dumont d'Urville, and he was crying his head off. He wanted to come with us back home.
He's had enough.
Oh, yeah, it's hopeless.
Because, I mean...
He had his golf bag sitting next to him.
He was ready to go.
When they start to play golf down there one day, they couldn't find a white golf ball. So Boston, he turned about and he said, well, we'll fix that up. So he painted them red. Well, that worked much better.
Yes. I'm surprised I hadn't thought of that.
No.
Mind you, I guess down there with the ice and that, it actually would be conducive to golf. I mean, it would be good for golf, wouldn't it? Because you've got nice long ice.
No. It's terrible. You've got to be in a little fjord before you get a complete flat surface. Right? Otherwise, when you're out where the current is and where you get the waves, it all becomes screw ice, as we call it. You know, you get small mountains, small hills.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. There you are.
We've all learned something there.
Anyway, when we finally got out of the ice down there, and the last night, a glacier came up and parked next to us. See, one of the secrets down there, when you get help from another ship, is to keep the two ships away from each other as much as possible. Because if you've got visitors from one ship to the other, there's all sorts of deals going on. And a Yankee ship, for instance, hasn't got any alcohol, right?
So they'd do anything to get some...
They become souvenir hunters. So they told me one story, I can't remember where it was, but all the porcelain disappears. All the cutlery disappeared. So there you are. Souvenir hunters, I suppose you can call them. Anyway, that's where I got... I used to have a lot of pictures down there because the Yanks took a lot of pictures. Anyway, we finally got out of it. But the big question was then, of course, how do we get the people out from Horseshoe Bay? So we went back to Argentine Island, where there was another ship down there, which is the normal ship, the supply vessel called John Biscoe, which is an English ship and a government ship, had been up and found a little fjord where we could put the plane down and it could take off from the ice. So we put Pat in the water first. He had pontoons on, and he flew back to Argentine Island. And in the meantime, up there, they had put the skis on the otter. And the otter then flew down to Horseshoe Bay, took all the huskies out, 12 huskies. That was the first load that came out. and came up and landed on this great big flat ice field. And then there was another two or three trips after that where all the personnel was brought out. Then we went into the Argentine island base, and we had a terrific storm. The storm always come from the south, always. So it blew up from down there, and the two ships got closer and closer to each other. And in those days, you don't find it nowadays, but those days, all the masts on the ships were supported by stays. And John Biscoe and the Keister got too close to each other. And the little beaver we had, the wings of the aircraft was 4 feet out over the side of the ship. And that got a little bit too close to John Biscoe. So we managed to pull a wing off.
Wow.
And that just fell down the water.
Oh, that was the end of the plane.
So that was the end of that.
Yeah. But there was no option.
No. So the wind dropped a little bit, and Fuchs, he said, I had enough. So he disappeared from our ship, where he had his own cabin with Professor Stevenson. And he stayed the next few days on the on John Biscoe. And then he came back again. We discharged whatever we had. We had 300 drums of aviation gas on board, plus the aircraft that was sent ashore. No, that we went up to Deception Island, that's right. Went up to Deception and unloaded it up there. John Biscoe went back to Montevideo and picked up a new wing, and then came back again down and put the wing on. And Pat, he flew down to Argentine Island, and it stayed there for the winter. And they told me next year when I met up with some of the boys in America that during the winter time, of course, everybody gets itchy down there. There's not much to do.
Oh, right.
You get sick of reading books and just chatting, and there's only so much you can do. If you don't get your brain working all the time, well, you get semi-senile. There's a picture of me here in the book where I'm quite sure that I am ready for the idiot box. That's me.
Oh, my goodness. I've just got to say to the listeners, John has just shown me a photograph of himself. How old would you have been there, roughly? In your 40s?
No, I'm only 30.
30. Oh, it's hard to tell because you've got a full beard, full black beard with a pipe. You look very fit, incredibly fit. And the eyes. There's a gaze in those eyes that looks quite, like you had enough.
Mad, quite mad.
Yes, quite had enough.
Yeah. Anyway, where were we? So Pat came back to the Argentine island with the beaver, stayed there for the winter with the aircraft. The otter was up on Deception Island. Well, during the autumn, not long after we put it in there, the wind came up and blew the otter away. The beaver down at Argentine Island, during the winter, when Pat, he must have gone itchy feet, he wanted to go and fly again. So he went out and inspected the ice floe out there, and he found that, well, we can, got the skis on, so we can take off from here. What he didn't do was, of course, that he didn't walk the whole length of the airstrip he's created.
Right.
So he started up in one end, and up in the other end there was a hole.
Oh.
So he just managed to run up in the other end, and the plane just sank down the water.
Oh, no.
So I don't know how long time it took before all the ice disappeared, but then the plane just disappeared too.
Was he okay, though? He got out?
Oh, yeah.
Because that water be freezing cold.
No. When the pontoons went through the thin ice, then they just get out and then
the pontoons. Walk on the ice. I forgot about the pontoons on the plane. Yes, of course.
But as the summer comes along, you know, all the ice around the airplane just start to melt and boom, it goes down.
So that was the end of her.
Yeah.
There must be lots of pieces of wreckage in the Antarctic. Planes
of course,
and boats
but nowadays they got a clause that whatever material you bring down there, you must take out again.
Yes.
But we, the Australians, they sent down, got hold of an old DC-3, and I think it came down to Mawson. That was a couple of years before my time. Got down to Mawson, and it sat there up on a hill. How it got up on a hill, I got no idea. But that just blew off the hill too.
Yeah, yeah.
The waste of time and money in what they're doing down there. In the old days, it was just hopeless. The oil was manhandled in the old days. Nowadays, it's all done by helicopters and sure. God knows what.
Sure. There's just one question that's been bugging me since we started.
Only one?
Well, no. but there's one that if I don't ask it, I'll really be annoyed at myself. We have the Kirsta Dam, we have the Nella Dam. What was the meaning of the dam? What did that refer to?
Well, the company started up as called Lauritsen. So all the ship had to start with a woman's name ending on an A. So therefore you got Kirsten, which becomes Kista.
Kista, yes.
Kirsten was the owner's wife. And in the old days, it was called Lau. Well, when the old fella that started the company, he died, the two young boys, they decided that it was going to be Dan, right? They were all very much for nationality, you know. They were the great big Vikings, the two brothers. So all the names had to stand you got the Magga Dan, well, Magga, that could be McGrader. And you got the Taylor. Well, that was christened by Phil Law's wife. I can't really remember her first name, but that became Taylor, and then the Dan.
Yes.
And that was the Nella, because her name was Nella. Yeah, the Nella Dan, that was after Phil's wife. That's right. But the Taylor Dan, that was my ship, but I can't remember who christened that. That's the picture you see up there. That's the Taylor Dan when she was launched up in the company shipyard.
So people have on their walls of their homes pictures of their families, and you've got some family pictures, but you've got your family of boats as well, haven't you?
Yeah, well, most of the boats you see over there, the square we go up in the left-hand corner there, well, that was where I trained on.
Yes.
And the one up on the top, that's on the way into Houston. The one below, that's is now a church ship down in Melbourne, in the Treaties Church.
It's in the church?
Yeah, a church ship.
Oh, I didn't know that, and I've lived in Melbourne all alone my life.
Oh, well, there you go.
I have to search.
Any more questions?
No.
No. And then you've got the Victory down here. And the bottom one over there with me on the ice floe down in the Bismarck Bay.
So, in many ways, it's been an interesting life for you, hasn't it?
Oh, I never miss a trick.
No.
I haven't really got time to get old.
No, you don't. And there's a question I usually ask people. I will ask it, but I know the answer. If you
well,
could
why
change,
do you ask it?
Well, because I think people probably will be wondering the same thing, but if you could have changed your life, would you, or would you do it again the same way? Would you still be a seaman? And
I would change a couple of small things.
Small things, yeah. John, it's been an absolute delight sharing your stories, because they are stories of a life that's no longer with us now, a style of life.
Before you finish, I would like to say this much, that it was a great big scandal that Nella went on the rocks. And the biggest scandal was that the Australian government built the Australian ship, which is not really an Australian ship. It's a pummy ship, and we charter it, and must cost a hell of a lot more money than when we had the old Lowerton ships. On top of that, what they have done down in the ice nowadays is that they have built bases that are more modern than even the Sheraton Hotel in Melbourne, I've been told.
Is that a good thing or not a good thing?
I think it's a bad thing.
For what reason?
I think it's too much wasted money.
Right.
Money could be spent much better, because most of the things they have explored and found out down there have been found out many, many years ago. I mean, why do you have to send people down year after year to sit and count how many penguins there are in a colony?
I can't
how many holes did you have to drill in the eyes to find out the same thing as you did last time?
Right.
I might be a little bit too critical, but it's...
Well, John, there's very few of us have had your experience to be able to say, John, they're silly questions, because your questions are based upon your experiences.
Yeah, but it's funny. There's not... See, I tell the truth. I have always... That's been my downfall all my life. I only tell the truth. And if I tell the truth, people don't like it because nobody wants to hear the truth. And that is one of the big failures in this modern world of ours. If people just weren't frightened of saying what they really mean and believe in, I mean, you can't go out and tell something you don't believe in, but if you really believe and know, got knowledge about something, I think you're allowed to speak it up. And it annoys me from time to time when you find that there are people that come up with stupid questions and almost try to convince you that what you just said is wrong. I don't know.
I certainly shan't do that. Rather, I'd say to you, John, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts and your experiences with all of us.
You're welcome.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is funded from the Commonwealth and State Government's Home and Community Care Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network.